This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
I'm Kim Grinnells of Dogman.com with Chris Fetter, Scott Eklund. It is past midnight and Washington defeats Oregon State 24-21 in just a game that just always felt a little bit off with a bye week, with a Friday night game, with the weather being predicted. Nobody knew what was going on and it was fine at times and then the wind would kick up. It was just a strange feeling down on the field. Announced attendance 62,400 and some change, and then weather was 56 and kind of cloudy, but the weather wasn't cold down on the sidelines at all. It wasn't cold, no. But the wind was coming up and going strong, but just kind of a weird feeling in this game. It didn't feel like a normal game, did it?
No, it didn't. It felt weird. It felt, the offense felt off. The defense, actually, I thought they played one of their best defensive games of the season. I know people are probably driving off the road as they're listening to this right now. And, you know, I just thought that overall it was a weird game. There was, what, probably 35,000 in the stands, maybe?
Felt like it. The announced attendance was
62.
Over 60. Yeah.
But yeah, it was a weird game overall. But and for Washington to even be in it, after watching them just go right down the field on their first drive, for Washington to be in it at the end and have a chance to win it, I thought that was pretty amazing.
Well, the other thing that was weird is traffic was just an absolute disaster getting here. I-5 got closed down about 3 o'clock. I don't know what that was.
Protest.
Yeah, it took me an hour and 15 minutes once I hit 520 to get over the bridge. And then in addition, they sent us out an email last night saying that our normal parking places wouldn't be honored. And we had to park basically, I think, in Northgate. So it was just kind of a weird feeling, and we finally got here, and you know, Chris took the light rail here, and the last train's already left, so we're going to make him walk back. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah.
But just when we talk about the first half, the guy that, to me, from what I was seeing down on the field, Tuli Lotulelei-Gassanoa had a monster game.
He did, at least early on. He was plugging up running lanes. He was making things hard on them, but they were still gashing Washington in that first half. I mean, Tuli was doing everything he could, but Mdiale was even getting pushed around. The linebackers were getting out of their lanes and things like that. It just feels weird because watching that game, it felt like Oregon State should have been up by like about 10, 17, 14 points, something like that. And then you look up and Washington's only a touchdown down, and they're able to tie it up. All three times, every time Oregon State scored the touchdown, Washington had an answer for them. And I thought that was very important.
Well, the first drive, Oregon State just gashed Washington. Mm-hmm. And then when they got the ball back, they were gashing them again, and Washington got a stop on fourth down.
Yeah, that was key.
Huge. It was huge.
Yeah.
But Oregon State just to be able to, they seemed to impose those first two drives that they had. Mm-hmm. If they hadn't stopped Oregon State on that second drive, do we got a completely different game?
I think so. I think the fourth down stop was huge. Was that the one where they stopped Coletto on the fourth down and two, or fourth down and one?
I can't remember.
Send him backwards.
I just know that they had the two fourth down stops in the first half.
Yeah, 90, that were, yeah, absolutely. It was critical. That one, because the other one was later in this first half, And that was one where they tried to throw it.
This is probably a game where I've the most demonstrative I've ever seen Kalen DeBoer. Mm-hmm. And rightfully so, on Oregon State's first touchdown. What'd they have? Two, three, four guys in motion before the ball was snapped?
Oh, I didn't.
Well, I don't know. There was a holding called on Jeremiah Martin,
Chris actually told me to quiet down. Yeah, because I was like, "What the what?"
Yeah, he had to show some restraint.
Yeah, but,
press box decorum and all that. It just felt off, and it just, you know what? I mean, we'd heard. I'd been kind of perusing some of the boards before the game, and you know, when people found out that it was Mothershed who was reffing the game and reffing this crew and all that. Everyone's like, yeah, this is going to be an absolute show. I mean, this is going to be Oregon State versus Washington featuring Mike Mothershed and his mechanics. Well, and it's like, and it really showed too. They went out of their way to really kind of impact the game. And usually when that happens, guys, that's negative.
I normally don't criticize officials. They were struggling tonight. Well, they missed some blatant calls. They had some weird calls. There was a guy, Oregon State defensive back, slashing his throat right in front of the ref that didn't get called. Several blatant holds that weren't called. Oregon State's first touchdown. They had two guys in motion. It wasn't called. The Jeremiah Martin.
Now it's Pac-12 after dark.
Yeah.
Holy moly.
Jeremiah Martin, it was such an obvious hold. I don't know how they could miss it.
Yeah.
So.
But then they got one right. I mean, the one that extended that, their last touchdown drive, Oregon State, when Jeremiah Martin got the face mask.
He really had to work hard for that. He had to wrap his arm around, and it was like, what in the world are you doing?
Look, the officials weren't great, but Washington, you know, and DeBoer will say this probably on Monday, we cannot put ourselves in that position.
Yeah.
I mean, the push by Jalen McMillan that got a 15-yard unsportsmanlike. Yes. I mean, you're watching it, and you're just like, why, first of all, that shouldn't have been called. But second of all, why are you doing that?
Yourself in a position?
I mean, the it was chippy between the receivers and Oregon's defensive backs all night long.
Yeah, it spilled over after the game.
And speaking of Jalen McMillan, he went out, and he was holding his ribs pretty gingerly. Mm-hmm. He came back out after the power outage, but I don't think he ended.
He did come back in, though.
He did
come back in and play, yes.
Okay.
He's a tough dude. Very tough dude.
I thought he was holding his ribs. Elise thought he might have gone in for concussion protocol.
Okay.
Possibly. I don't know. I just know that the only reason I feel that bringing up the referees in this particular instance was that they screwed over both teams for a couple different ways. And so it's just when it gets to the point where you hear the lip service in the offseason – you know, they're hiring guys, they're going through their due diligence, they promise that it's going to be better, and it's not. It just is not better. These referees are really, really poor. And it's just unfortunate because they don't have to make half the calls they're making. And frankly, I think the fact that they're not calling a lot of the holding calls, like on the offensive lineman, for instance, I think that's a good thing. I think they should let them play in a lot of ways. But the afters and stuff... Let's put it this way: all of those personal fouls and unsportsmanlike and stuff that didn't stop the Oregon the Washington receivers and the Oregon State DBs from having it on the Oregon State sideline after the game was over.
Mm-hmm.
It spilled over. So their method of containment by you know penalizing these guys and what have you it had zero effectiveness. Yeah. Didn't work at all.
Yeah, just taking a look real quick on the penalties. Let me just find it here real quick.
Both teams had nine.
Yeah. Penalty yardage. Why am I? Oh, 9 penalties for 81 yards for Washington. For Oregon State. 9 for 97 for Washington. And at the half, they both had 4. But it just seemed like those 4 first half penalties for Washington had a hell of an impact where they were on third downs. 2 of them, I believe, were on third downs that gave Oregon State first downs. And I think 2 of the 4 on Oregon State were like false starts. But the two, there was a couple of real key penalties in that first half that just really killed Washington.
Not as key as the ones in the second half, but as bad as some of the penalties were in the first half, guys, it's the pick six that kills you. It's this, when you're playing a game that's this tight, and of course, we're looking at a game that was decided by 3 points. Again, kudos to Vegas. Vegas always knows. I don't know how they know, but they know. And they got this one spot on. I think everyone that we all predicted it was going to be inside of a touchdown or less. I don't know. Maybe some other people didn't. I had it at 30. I had it at a 4-point game. But bottom line is, when you just can't have those sudden change plays. You cannot have pick sixes. You can't have fumbles, returns for touchdowns. In a game like this, for Washington, yes, it's at home. But the crowd, I don't know how much the crowd really impacted Oregon State.
It didn't.
Maybe in that drive in the second half where they started going backwards, mm-hmm. had some false starts and some things like that, maybe you can attribute some of that to the crowd. But bottom line, guys, you don't lose the turnover battle in games like this and expect to win. And for these guys not only to do that, but to come back and win, man, gritty doesn't even begin to talk about just the way these guys were able to overcome their own mistakes, believe in what they were doing, and find a way to win.
Scott, tell me what you saw in the pick six. I was at the opposite end of the field, and I didn't see it.
Penix just didn't see the middle linebacker. Threw it right to him.
Yep.
Caught it, and basically had a clear path to the end zone. I mean, there's really nothing else to say. I think Penix in film review will say, I just didn't see the guy.
He threw a couple of other passes that should have been intercepted as well.
Well, the one that should have been picked off toward the end of the first half was one where he and Jalen Polk weren't on the same page, it didn't look like.
Right.
It looked like, because Polk was running a down, and Penix threw it outside, like he was going to stop and go outside.
Yeah, and the only way I'm going to be able to figure out if this opinion is correct is by going and watching the tape after. But it felt to me, outside of those arrow routes or those, I think Hugh Millen calls them Texas routes,
yeah.
where it's the tight end or sometimes it's a running back mm-hmm. that will come in and angle and Penix will find them. I think, you know, Devin Culp had a really nice one. Was it Westover that had one as well, or maybe one of the running backs? But either way, outside of those plays kind of in the middle, it felt like to me as soon as Penix threw that pick six, they didn't look middle at all anymore. And looking at Oregon State looked like they were vacating the middle. Like if Penix had really wanted to run, or if Grubb had called like maybe a design draw or something, under the right circumstances, I think he could have gone for 15, 20 yards because everything was going out to the edges.
With the two stops that Washington had with Oregon State in the first half.
You're talking the fourth downs.
Yeah, two fourth down stops that they had. And that was deep into Washington territory. If wind hadn't been a factor, you guys were up here. I mean, the wind was crazy down there at times.
Yeah.
Would they have kicked field goals?
Probably if the wind hadn't been going bad.
Yeah, we haven't gotten a chance to hear anything that Jonathan Smith said postgame. I guarantee you the Oregon State guys will be asking, you know, under normal circumstances, if there had been no wind, mm-hmm. would you be kicking those? I would expect that he would.
Go ahead.
Because he's not the kind. DeBoer said after the game how they were in the mode of like we're gonna go for touchdowns or like go for broke. Like we weren't gonna settle unless they were like maybe inside the 20 essentially. Mm-hmm. Well, Jonathan Smith historically has been a guy that's
he's
used
a pretty
his kicker.
Conservative guy.
Yeah, he would. I would think he'd normally go for field goals in those circumstances, but definitely not tonight.
Well, let's just put it this way. On that first one, the first fourth down stop, I understood why they went for it. Washington hadn't been stopping them on the ground.
Yeah.
They had already stopped them on third and one. Now it's fourth and one. And Jack Coletto.
Yeah, you got the fourth down terminator.
I made the comment to you. I've seen Oregon State play a lot over the last couple of years. Yeah. I do not remember Jack Coletto not making a first down or a touchdown.
Yeah, once they figured out that he was that special and he was almost an automatic first down in those situations, yeah, I can't remember a time where he got stopped.
So, Kim, to answer your question, the second one I questioned.
Right.
They probably would have kicked a field goal if the weather hadn't been what it was. But the first one, I think he still goes for it.
I'm down on the field and it was not cold at all.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't cold. It didn't rain. We got spit on a little bit towards the end of the game, but it wasn't rain. But the wind, I mean, it just seemed like it would calm down. And then when it would come back, it would just come back with a vengeance. And there was no rhyme or reason to it. And You know, Michael Penix claims it didn't impact him throwing the ball at all, but I think it impacted Jaden Green a little bit. I think it impacted Jack McAllister quite a bit. But the weather down there, I mean, it was, it seemed to be a lot worse towards the lake.
Well, Scott noticed it as soon as the McAllister dropped those two, and that's not. I don't think that's the fault of Jaden Green.
No,
that's on Jack McAllister. And Scott noticed this. It was a good spot too. He noticed that when they scored their first touchdown, Washington, the guy that came in for the PAT, the hole.
No, I didn't. Kim actually.
Yeah. Oh, did? Kim, it was Dylan Morris. I thought you saw.
Well, I said it because
he didn't come in so much. They lined up at the swinging gate for the extra point, and it was Dylan Morris
right
there, and Dylan Morris came out to hold.
But our thought was if McAllister's not
normally
holding,
and that's normally Jack McAllister,
right? But if he's not holding on to the ball, this it felt to me like what they did with Wayne Talapapa at Cal. If you're dropping passes and it's maybe not your night, they're not going to hesitate to have a short leash on guys and move to the next guy.
Is that him down there doing bear crawls?
but think about this, though. On the most important play of the entire night, the field goal to win the game.
It was McAllister.
McAllister was holding it.
Yeah, so that kind of blew a hole right through our theory.
I don't want to jump too far ahead, so I'll just say this and then we'll jump back. But on that last drive, and Washington has it 3, and it's 3rd down, and you're going, we don't want Jack McAllister coming and kicking the ball.
Well, a lot of people were like, because we were like, Jack McAllister, he's back to punt. And they're like, oh, well, we thought the whole strategy was going to be just don't punt.
Yeah.
In the second half. Just don't worry about punting. Just don't take punting out of the equation.
Yeah, just moving on to the second half, I thought they made some fantastic adjustments in the second half on the defense. Oregon State had 162 total yards at half. They finished the game with 262. Am I right on that? They only had 100 yards in the second half?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
It was 101, and 20-some odd of it was that final, the final play where they were throwing the ball all over the place.
And maybe it's unfair for me to say this, but I really do feel like the wind affected Bengal Branson a lot more than Michael Penix.
Yeah.
In the balance. Obviously, there were moments. But I think Branson, what did he throw for, like 60, 70 yards? I mean, he didn't.
It was nothing.
Yeah, he threw for 87 yards.
That'll help Washington's
He was 12 for 19, so it wasn't like he was completely wild with his throws. They just knew anytime they tried to go over the top and they had beaten maybe Perriman or one of those guys. I kept telling you during the game, Scott, I was like, I think Washington needs to make sure they're playing super tight because let's say they do run a double move or whatever. What are the odds with this wind that someone's going to be able to complete a bomb like 40, 50 yards down the field?
And he had one late in the third quarter.
Yeah, but it still wasn't that close.
Early in the fourth quarter. And was it – it was number – I think it was what's his face? Treshawn Harrison, but it might have been number 2, whoever number 2 was for the Molden or something like whatever his name is.
Silas Bolden, maybe?
Silas Bolden. He beat Perriman down the sidelines. I mean, he was a good 2 or 3 steps behind him, and Gulbranson throws it, and it goes about 20 yards inside.
Yeah. No, and, I mean, but the way he threw it, it was the wind was going to eat it up. It wasn't like a Penix
dart.
Beautiful dart, deep ball, perfect spin. This thing was Billy Kilmer special, like floating everywhere.
Did Michael Penix go deep once this game?
Oh.
He tried once or twice, but even so, they weren't really bombs. No. They were like maybe 20-yard plays.
Was there a go route all night?
His long was 27 yards.
Yeah, but no, even on an incompletion.
There might have been go routes, but he probably didn't feel comfortable throwing them.
Yeah, it just you know.
I'm trying to think, was that the long 127? Was that the middle screen to Odunze?
Yes,
deep in territory.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's early second half. To me, we could talk about the play of the game a little bit later
that sparked them.
But to me, that was when I looked at it, guys. And I don't know, maybe the fans will say I don't agree with you or not. But to me, it just felt like the whole first half, Washington's offense. First of all, this is the first game where they didn't score at least a field goal in the very first possession of the game. So that was new.
Uh-huh.
It just felt tentative. I wouldn't say cautious. It just unsure. And I don't know if it was the wind playing tricks with them, but it just felt like the offense was not clicking.
Well, let's
and I'm not talking about just Penix. I'm talking about the whole thing.
Let's give some credit to Oregon State because that's probably the best defensive secondary Washington's faced all year.
Well, and I will give them credit in this sense that whatever game plan they had coming in worked pretty well. But in the second half, with the adjustments both teams made, I really thought that Washington was able to find something on the ground in the second half, and that really helped them when they needed to maybe not just take a little bit of the load off of Penix, but they needed to show just a semblance of some balance to be able to throw some passes and get some completions.
You know, with Washington unable to score on their last possession in the first quarter, but they got the ball back in their first possession in the second half. So, you know, a chance to start some momentum, but they weren't able to do anything on that first possession, and they're down seven, and they're giving the ball back to Oregon State, who pretty much carved them up and chewed, you know, in the first half.
When they talk
and
about
I think
the middle
there was
third.
I think there was a lot of nervous people when Oregon State got that ball
back. Yeah, and there was. And guess what? It was a three and out.
Yeah, but that's what I was going to say. When they talk about that middle eight, they talk about the last 4 minutes of the first half, first 4 minutes of the second half. Washington lost that too, and they still were able to find a way to come back and win. And it was tough because if Washington looked like they had a chance to maybe get at least 3 points on that final drive of the first half, and that just imploded at the end. They just couldn't do anything with it. And then to come out and have all those adjustments, all that momentum, all that belief, everything that they talked about coming out, and they throw a three and out on them, it's like, wow. I mean, this at that point, if you're an Oregon State fan, you're loving it. You're like, yeah, they don't think they can win. They don't think they can win.
Washington was able to score. Oh, boy, what did defensive back lose Jack Westover? What happened there?
Yeah, that was just a breakdown. It was just a complete breakdown. Penix sucked him up on the play, and Jack Westover. It was I don't want to call it a scramble drill, but Westover just kept going back into the end zone, and the guy didn't go with him.
Yeah, I think it was kind of a scramble drill because I think Michael. I think that he had to scramble out because first read covered, second read cover, and he looks over and there was nobody within 20 yards of Jack Westover sitting in the end zone.
And I'll tell you, it was an amazing way that they were able to overcome that because that was the drive where Troy Faltano got called for. They call it unnecessary roughness.
I don't know. They never actually explained what it was.
But the thing was is that he was in position to block and the guy turned literally right as he's blocking him. I don't know. I literally don't know as a player how you.
I think you might have missed something. I think he knocked him down, and then the whistle blew, and the guy got back up, and Troy knocked him down again.
Oh.
So wait, so you're saying the whistle, like the play was dead, and after the play was dead, he knocked him over? Because that's
either
a dead ball.
It was either dead or he was out of the play, and he just hit him again.
But it says no play on the sheet.
Yeah, that's weird.
Which means that's during the play.
Yeah,
by the way, does this just seem like every game Jack Westover just makes a play?
Yeah.
He's kind of an underappreciated guy.
Yeah, only had two catches, but that 24-yard touchdown was huge.
Yeah, no, he just seems to make a play. And then
selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or
I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
I was getting texts from you guys. You were going home after the power went out.
Yep, I was. I was ready.
Yeah.
What's even crazier about that, guys? We asked DeBoer because everyone's like, oh, DeBoer's probably never. They had that happen with him at Fresno.
Yeah.
But like, it was less than four. It was 4 years ago.
Yeah.
He said that the same thing happened, and it took almost the exact same amount of time, same situation where they had to wait for the lights to cool down, turn them back on. I mean,
I swear it was some guy who was probably macking on some chick, leaned up against the wall, and oops, I turned the lights off. No, but still, I'm serious. I saw the lights go out after the touchdown, and I looked at Fetters, and I go, are the lights off?
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, they are. And then I was surprised they kicked the extra point.
They kicked the extra point with the lights off.
I know. I was shocked.
Yeah,
I was shocked by that.
What was funny, though, is, you know, after a couple of minutes when it was obvious the light was going to come back on. We're off the rails again already.
Already?
You should have seen all the guys run into the locker room.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And they weren't going for treatment or anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was pretty funny all the guys run into the locker room. But
although I want to know you guys' opinion, who did that affect more, Washington or Oregon State?
I don't think anybody.
I don't know if it was long enough to affect anyone, but if it did, it obviously affected Oregon State more than it affected
Washington.
I mean,
in the final analysis, we can say it that way. But Washington had just scored. They've got the momentum with them. Tie game. They're back in it. And so, you know, if I'm DeBoer, obviously, I don't think you want to see what your defense can do. Defense had risen to the occasion in the second half. And now Oregon State, you know, it could have hurt them because they've got to come in and they've got to run an offense cold. And as it turned out, it did affect them.
You hear what Penix said he did during the...
No.
I mean, what was it, about 20-minute delay?
Yeah, 20, 25 minutes. Yeah.
When I asked Michael Penix what he did, I sat on the heated bench. I was cold.
Yeah.
Well, you could tell while Washington was doing all their warm-ups and stuff, all the guys on the Oregon State side, they were all sitting on the benches.
Yeah, but they had done their stretches earlier.
But they had to wait.
Yeah.
Which was, I don't know, maybe that ended up being a bit of a miscalculation.
Yeah. Wayne Talapapa with a touchdown out of the Wildcat.
Two. Well, he scored out of the Wildcat, and then he scored just on a regular handoff. Yeah, I mean, he powered it in. It was good to see.
And that's what he was expected to do when he came here, and I don't think he's been as effective this year as we thought he might be.
Mm-hmm. No, he hasn't. Cam Davis has been the short yardage guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Talapapa, there were a couple. I don't know if you could see it, but we saw it. Chris and I saw it. People on our boards saw it too. The blitz pickup that Wayne Talapapa had on a couple, he just washed his guy completely out of the play.
Yeah,
it was pretty impressive.
Yeah. You've stood next to Wayne Talapapa.
He's not tall, but he is built.
Yeah, you know, he's just kind of, was he 5'9"?
No, he's about my height, 5'10", 5'11".
Yeah, but he's just thick.
Very thick. He's 220 pounds.
He's thick. But, you know, just, you know, before we get into the final drive, which, you know, decided the game, let me just run down a few of the stats. Net yards rushing, Oregon State with 175, Washington with 100. Oregon State was 40 for 175, Washington 24 carries for 100 yards. Total yards was 262.
Mm-hmm.
For Oregon State, and they had 162 at the half, so I think it was only 100 yards for Oregon State, but Washington was at 398. A couple of other numbers that jump out. Washington was 76 plays,
mm-hmm.
Oregon State only with 59. Again, those penalties, each team with 9, that kind of jumps out. And third down conversions, Oregon State was 4 for 10. And what do you want to be at, about 33%, 30 to 40% on those third downs?
Actually, anything over 40% is considered pretty damn good.
Yeah, so I'm talking about, they were 4 for 10. And Washington was 11 of 18 on third downs.
Yeah.
So they were real efficient on that. Red zone chances, Oregon State was only 2 of 4. You know, with those two
huge
stops on fourth downs, and Washington was 4 of 4.
Bend but don't break.
Yeah, and when you go into the individual statistics, Damian Martinez had a big game with 19 carries for 107 yards. Ben Gulbranson was 12 of 19, but only 87 yards with a long of 21. So they weren't throwing it down the field at all. Trayshawn Harrison, the wide receiver out of Garfield, right?
Yep.
He was targeted 7 times, but he had 5 receptions. But of those 5 receptions, only 15 yards. Mm-hmm. Only 15 yards on those
receptions.
How do you
get 15 yards of total passes with 19 yards of yak?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Getting stopped behind the line of scrimmage.
Well, no, but I'm just saying that.
Yeah.
That would be, you'd almost have to, I don't know. You'd have to work at that, right?
Yeah. Cameron Davis with 11 carries for 55 yards. Telepapa with 8 carries for 27 yards. Michael Penix, again, throwing the ball more than 50 times, especially in this win. 30 of 52 for 298 with a touchdown and an interception with a long of 27. That might be a season low for a game.
It is
as long as it's 27.
He'd had 300 yards at least in every game.
So. Well, no, I'm talking about his longest only being 27.
Oh, I'm sure that's got to be low.
Yeah. Romu Dunze was targeted 10 times with 7 receptions for 102 yards. Of those 102 yards, 49 of those yards were yards after the catch. Jalen Polk, 11 targets with 7 receptions for 39 yards. Cameron Davis, 7 for 27. Just a little bit of a struggle for Jack McAllister. He had a blocked punt, and he shanked another one. Leading tackler tonight was Cam Bright. He had a big game, 10 total tackles, and he was the only one with a sack, and he had 1.5 tackles before loss. So didn't get a chance to look down the participation. Doesn't look like we saw like Tristan Dunn or Javon Parker. Do we see Javon Parker in there tonight?
I don't remember seeing him.
Yeah, we'll have to take a look at that a little bit later.
Didn't see Richard Newton, even though he was stressed.
He was pretty hyped up before the game.
Showing him on the participation chart.
Maybe special teams.
Yeah,
he didn't get any carries.
And Will Nixon, is he on there?
He was limping on the sidelines, just for an FYI. Washington gets the ball back with, 4 minutes?
4:33
back, and Oregon State punts, and I'm trying to remember what happened. Washington's on Oregon State's last drive pushed them back quite a bit.
Yeah.
Penalties.
They made a couple really good, there was penalties, and then they made that, then Cam Bright got the tackle for loss on the screen pass, and the defense just figured out that, hey, we're going to play man-to-man on the outside and stop the run. And stop them so they couldn't get any running game going.
Yeah, 3rd and 24.
I
think Washington fans should have felt pretty confident they were going to stop them.
I felt pretty good, but it was just like, we've seen this before. But the other thing was the punt, then they get a great bounce.
Right.
All the way down to the 2.
Straight up in the air, they catch it at the 2. And you're just thinking, or 3 yard line, you're thinking to yourself, God, if Washington's going to win this game, they've got to get like 3 first downs and just run out this clock.
Well, you know what Jonathan Smith is thinking.
Yeah.
We stop him here inside the 3, and we're going to, that freshman's going to punt again, and we're going to get the ball back, and we got 3 timeouts in our back pocket.
2 timeouts. Timeouts. And then they just make a couple nice throws. Mike Penix makes a couple nice throws. They get a couple nice runs from Cam Davis.
Well, just real quick, on the first play, they handed it off.
To Davis.
Second one, they kind of threw a little screen pass or quick out to Cam Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one, which I thought was a huge play, just, threw to Devin Culp for that first down.
Yeah, the Texas route. Yep.
And that, to me, that was, I don't know, I wouldn't call it the play of the game, but boy, if they hadn't converted that.
Well, the play of the game. I agree with you, Cam. They had to convert that, obviously, to get to the play of the game that I listed off. But so Washington is facing, okay, so can we march forward to my play of the game? So, Washington is facing 3rd and 6 at the OSU 25. Where was it?
21.
So the OSU 21, Washington wasn't going to kick a field goal there. There's no, I mean, if we take Kalen DeBoer for what he said.
Well, yeah, he'd never done it before.
Yeah, yeah.
He'd never stopped short.
But if he said he wouldn't have kicked it outside of 20 yards.
Oh, yeah. No, for sure.
Kalen said on the last drive he targeted the 20-yard line was where he felt comfortable with Peyton Henry.
Yeah, 20. Yeah. So 20, just to give people an understanding, 21-yard line typically would be a 38-yard kick.
Yeah.
And we were trying to tell people because, you know, Oregon State had a similar yardage and they didn't go for it, or they didn't go for a kick. And people were like, why aren't they trying to kick the field goal? And we're like, guys, you just don't. You don't have a great understanding of just how crazy the wind is.
I was down on the field before. One of the things I like to do at every home game or any game we go to, because if it's on the road, I'll do this too. But I'll stand under the goal post and I'll watch guys kick. How are they hitting the ball? Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's no wind, so I'm just seeing how they hit the ball. But today, they were hitting the ball fine, but the ball was going all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. DeBoer even said post game that he watched Peyton Henry with a couple of kicks, and I don't remember what the yardage was, but he said he literally hit him right down the middle to start. One went one way, one went the other way. And it's like, how can you possibly have any sort of confidence that you're going to know where that ball's going to go?
Real quick, Scott, the wind at the opened end of the stadium was much more severe. Mm-hmm. Even though you had the wind, it was much more severe at the open wind.
And pushing it around.
And on that last drive, there was virtually no wind.
Yeah, and so, they're third and six from the 21.
Yeah.
And Washington wasn't going to kick from there. So they had two decisions to make. They either needed to get a first down, or they're probably going to have to go for it. And if Washington doesn't go for it, then Oregon State now has about a minute and 10 seconds left. And they have two timeouts. And all they're going to do is run it a couple times, and they'll probably throw a pass or two here and there. But it was not going to go in Washington's favor. And then Penix drops back, throws that.
It's just an out route,
yeah,
it looks like to me.
Out route,
just a flat route
or something. But he throws a dart,
yeah,
and Cameron Davis dives, catches it. Now, I still think Washington got a kind of favorable spot on that.
For sure.
I thought he was down before he got to the first down marker. But they didn't call it that way. They didn't even replay it.
I thought some of the spots tonight were very,
very sketchy.
Iffy.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was a heck of a catch by Cameron Davis, and that was our play of the game.
Yeah.
Because if they don't make that, Kalen DeBoer's got a really tough decision.
And then now, all of a sudden, you're forcing Jonathan Smith to use his timeouts. So that he has any, you know, hope of getting any time left, even if they don't go any further on that drive and they do kick a field goal. But because that next play, Penix goes for a yard on a bit of a scramble, and I think they had to call a timeout there, and there was 32 seconds.
First down, and they still had a couple of timeouts left, and they're on the 3-yard line, and they elect to throw it on the first down.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that.
They had two timeouts left.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that. Maybe I don't know if those were straight up calls or if Penix saw how loaded the box was that maybe he changed it. I don't know.
Yeah, but that first pass to Davis, if he just gives him anything, he scores.
Yeah, that's a touchdown.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, it just Washington played that really well. They did everything they needed to do to get the win, and that play to Giles Jackson was huge. They called that a pass. I thought it was
a pop pass.
I know, but I thought it was a handoff.
Yeah, so that way if they drop it, it's incomplete.
Yeah.
So that, but I mean, that's a ballsy call by Grubb. Because have we really seen that go for much this year?
And it went for 17.
We've seen it dropped.
We've seen it drop, but we've also seen it where any upfield pressure on that side of the ball, and it usually goes down. Because one of the things that Scott and I were kind of remarking to each other over the course of the game was, even when they were trying to find some holes running the ball in the second half, and I thought they did a much better job, they just don't have a guy who can beat people one-on-one.
They can't make a miss.
They can't make a miss. Yeah. It's very, very interesting that the running backs, they're good at doing the kind of the one cut and slash, getting upfield. They can you know, try to move the pile a little bit, lean forward. But they just can't make people miss.
Look for them to get a I've been telling you guys this. You keep on poo-pooing me. They're going to go get a train. They're going to go get a running.
I'm not poo-pooing
you.
When
have we ever pooed
anyone? All I'm saying is everybody wants those guys, Kim.
They're going to go after a running back They're looking for an impact running back in the portal.
So is everybody else.
Okay, well, so you doubt Courtney Morgan? I'll tell him.
Well, Scott doesn't. But they picked three in this last cycle.
And I'm not
poo pooing at all. Wayne Del Papa has played lights out for them. He's been great.
Yeah.
But he is not an impact guy in the way that they need him to be.
No.
It is stupid o'clock, so let's wrap this up. Chris Fetters?
Yeah, I just think that this is such a confidence boost for this program, getting a top 25 win over Oregon State. They came to play. Now, granted, I don't know if the game would have been different if Chance Nolan's playing quarterback instead of Gulbranson, because, you know, from what we had heard all week long is that Gulbranson was kind of the high ceiling or high floor, low ceiling kind of guy. I was talking to Carter Baines about this from Beaver Blitz before in the pregame, and he was saying those types of things, and I was like, God, everything you guys are saying about Gulbranson is like the way people felt about Jake Browning at Washington. He's a game manager. He's not going to necessarily lose the game for you, but is when the game's on the line, can he make a play for you? No one really knows. He's still a really young kid. So who knows how he's going to do down the road, but I just felt for Washington to come back and win that fourth quarter 10-0 at home, again, top 25, the conditions, the outage, it seemed like there were too many things going against them, losing the turnover battle. I mean, how they're not able to force any turnovers is stunning to me. And for them to overcome all that stuff really says a lot about their character and their grit, and I think it's a phenomenal win.
Scott Eklund?
Great win. I know it wasn't pretty. I know it's frustrating for fans, but this team is 7-2. They just beat their second. They just got their second win over a top 25 team this year. They didn't overlook Oregon State going to play Oregon. Next week is going to be its own challenge for many reasons. But I think Washington is definitely heading in a great direction. I don't think the defense is going to be able to hold teams like they did today. If you can get two wins out of the next 3 weeks, you're at 9-3.
Yeah.
And I think if we told anybody at the beginning of the season you can be 9-3 at the end of the year, would anybody take that? Everybody would have taken that, right? After going 4-8 last year.
Yeah.
So while I know there's some frustration with the way they lost to UCLA and Arizona State, and this one against Oregon is going to be a tough one, but you have to be happy about the direction of the program, even if there's some frustrating parts.
And Kim, before you wrap this up, is there anything to the Scott Eklund bounce? Is that too soon? Can we talk about that?
What?
When you picked Oregon State, yeah.
Yeah.
Both top 25 wins.
I'm going to tell you guys games. Right now, I'm picking Oregon this coming week.
I have a feeling we're all picking
Oregon. Yeah, I know. So,
I don't think you're going to be alone. No. I don't think you're going to be on the island like you have been the other two times. So,
Kalen DeBoer's putting himself in position to be coach of the year for the conference.
Yeah, I still think it's Dan Lanning. If Oregon wins the conference, it's Dan Lanning.
And for them to come back the way they have after that Georgia game, that's pretty
and they've
impressive.
Looked really good.
He's going to be in the conversation. So.
Oh, he absolutely will be in the conversation. Yeah. If your team's possibly going to the playoffs and you've never coached before. Or head coached before.
Yeah.
I don't see how you're not called the conference.
Yeah, for those who were down at the UCLA game, down in the Rose Bowl, they have LED lighting, which you can shut on and off just like your home lights. I don't know what they call these, incandescent lights or whatever.
I was talking to my father about this, and he knew exactly what they were. He said vapor, something or other.
Yeah, but it takes 15 to 20 minutes. If they go off, it takes 15 to 20 minutes for them to turn back on. And the difference between the LEDs and the lights that they have here, which is what most people have, it is so much brighter with the LEDs. It's ridiculous how much brighter it is. So Chip Lightham was down on the sidelines. You know Chip, who manages all the facilities here. And he was pretty nervous about everything. I asked him what it would cost to replace the these lights with the LEDs. And he just looked at me and goes, $800 to $1 million. I go, okay, that's not getting done anytime soon. But so that's part of the reason why the delay was so long. Once those lights go out, I was told it takes 15 to 20 minutes for those things to warm up.
Yeah. They have to cool off.
Yeah. So, anyways, big win for the basketball team on their exhibition game. A lot of excitement around from what we saw. Game against Weber State on Monday, 8 o'clock tip-off. And I can't remember who they play on Friday.
I don't know. They're on Pac-12 networks, both those games.
Yeah, 8 o'clock kickoff, and then we still don't have a time We still do not have a time on the Oregon game. Hopefully sometime on Saturday.
Saturday night, hopefully.
Or Sunday.
Or Sunday.
Probably more likely Sunday morning, but possibly Saturday night. It's just the way the media works, they just have to wait until those games resolve themselves to see where they want the windows to be. But I would, if I had to guess right now, I'm guessing either 4 or 4:30. That would be my guess.
Special shout out to the university admins. They brought up a cooler with several beers in them, and I grabbed myself a Coors Light, which I normally don't do. So special.
Which is basically like this water.
Yeah. So
hey, guys, before we wrap it up, I want to give a real shout out. I forgot to mention him the whole time. Corey Luciano was the guy who was the center for almost most of the game until like the last couple series. Mateo Mele was the center mm-hmm. of that final drive.
Yeah.
And he came in, and I think he was a big part of why they were able to open some things up. And I just think he should get a shout out because I think that's really hard to do, to not play for like three quarters of the game plus, then all of a sudden come in cold and be expected to contribute. I thought he was huge.
Love these 7:30 starts. So what's worse, Chris?
Plus 7:30 start plus.
Yeah, a 20-minute delay.
Yeah, and then what's worse, a 7:30 football start or an 8 o'clock basketball start?
Oh, the 7:30 football start, for sure.
Because football games are 3 hours, 3.5 hours
you
long.
Can still, you can still get out.
Basketball
yeah, you can still
hours,
get out.
2 hours?
Yeah, you can still get out by midday in basketball.
We're going to get out of here. So for all of us at Dogman.com, I'm Kim Grinnells, along with Chris Fetters and Scott Eklund. Go Dogs.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.